the real action. The pot party. The trippers, the grasshoppers, the hip ones, all gathered in secrecy and flying high as a kite. Outside the boundaries of their phony world of kicks is the ever-present possibility of discovery.
North Korea, let's not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury, like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening, beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
Welcome to Off Baseline. I'm Nate Staley.
While it is true that nighttime devours the day,
today on the show, marijuana, cannabis, pot, reefer, ganja, with various states across the nation having already legalized medicinal and recreational use, the Attorney General cracking down on the devil's weed like he's Harry Anslinger 2.0 is a bit interesting and worth exploring. So we'll take a brief look at the issue on the micro and macro scale through social science lenses. But first, is Trump creating world peace? Should we give him a peace prize, like the Nobel Peace Prize? Amidst breakthrough talks between South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, an official end to the Korean conflict and a partial or total denuclearized North Korea may be imminent. Should we give Trump all the credit? Now, fun fact, I spent a fond year and a half of high school in Seoul, South Korea as a military brat, so news about the region particularly catches my attention. I visited the Demilitarized Zone, or DMZ, which is a neutral zone between the two countries, which has remained heavily guarded and with constant armed troops from both the North and South militaries, keeping watch since the Korean War's ceasefire, not ending the war. So technically, fun fact, still is an active but inactive, it's still a war, but it's inactive. But the ceasefire back in the 50s, they have a little meeting area in the middle where you can sit at one half of the table and be in the north and be in the south on the other side. It's really a surreal setting. In the blink of an eye, one country could decide to attack another, and hostilities could escalate and to a deadly conflict just instantly. And it has a few times here or there throughout the years. But when you have two countries sort of not officially at peace, pointing weapons at each other nonstop, that creates a very volatile situation. So it was a very fascinating place to visit. With the meeting of Trump coming up with the leader of North and South Korea, we entertain the question, is Trump going to facilitate this this war to an official end and creating some stability with his tough talk and with forcing the table and being a master negotiator? Well, let's hold off on the peace prize.
See how we do with Iran. Probably we won't do very well with them, but that's okay too. They've got to understand life, because I don't think they do understand life. If you look at what's happening in the Middle East with Syria, with Yemen, with all of the places they're involved, it's bedlam and death, and we can't allow that to happen. So we have terminated a terrible, terrible deal that should have never, ever been made. And we will be putting on among the strongest sanctions that we've ever put on a country, and they're going into effect very shortly.
So with the meeting upcoming with Trump and the leaders of the two Koreas to negotiate from a very precarious and dangerous geopolitical situation to some form of nuclear disarmament, the Trump administration, perhaps emboldened by its newest addition and unabashed imperialist John Bolton, tears apart the Iran deal, which the IAEA and several other international organizations had verified years after the agreement, an agreement that was actually one of the few foreign policy achievements of America in the mostly tumultuous 21st century, perhaps even longer before that. So what this essentially does, besides hurl us closer towards war with Iran and flirt with a potential worldwide conflict, is set a clear precedent. The United States will not honor an agreement, even if you give up more than you're comfortable with. The United States will back out of an agreement if it finds a reason to, and at a moment's notice, will threaten your country with regime change. Once a regime changer, always a regime changer. That's a tough sentence to say. Bush, Trump, Clinton, doesn't matter who it is, you can't trust us. Obama, whoever, we're just going to fall back on our deal, give us a few years. Now, I wanted to do this segment flirting with the idea that maybe Trump bumbled his way into something good. In this era of critics like myself constantly having to take a contrarian hatchet to every policy or childish sounding statement, part of me really wanted to leave the door cracked on this one. Not for the Peace Prize, of course. That's for people who actually know what they're doing. Now, if I'll stop myself here, if you're, for some reason, you're a MAGA person listening to this show, you'll be relieved to know I wasn't quite sold on Obama's Nobel Prize bona fides either. So there you go, if that helps. If you're familiar with Richard Nixon's madman strategy of seeming unstable and predictable to produce desperate results in the opposite direction, perhaps that's something we could have attributed to Trump's fire and fury rhetoric. I don't think that's what worked, what had worked up until a certain point for a couple of reasons. One is just an ad hominem. Okay. I just don't think that's how his brain works. And two, to think that, would be, I think, a severe underestimation, of South Korea. They've gone through a massive political shift, organizing to pressure impeachment of a president riddled with corruption, controversy, and destructive policies, and electing a government that, for the first time in a long time, was open to peace, open to negotiation, and was willing to put in the hard work to get there. It's really pretty incredible what they have accomplished, and Moon Jae-in has been a bit more than just a figurehead in the process, to say the least. He's actually been an involved participant and a force in that movement. But I really wanted a silver lining here. Was that too much to ask? One thing where I can say, look, the moon didn't fall into Lake Michigan. Trump did a thing. But alas, when Trump gave us lemons and we made lemonade, Trump said, hold on, let me pee in it a little. And now that's another disturbing thought for you to take with you for the rest of your week, aside from potential war.
What is the matter with them? I suppose because most of them are psychiatrists and others, so they all expansion movement that really was so positive, and it led to this decline. The creating of knowledge that this drug is dangerous, you cannot play with it, it's not funny, it's not something to laugh about, and trying to send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Marijuana has been a Schedule I drug since about 1973, when it kind of... probably is hard to make out there, the recording, but when Richard Nixon formed the Drug Enforcement Agency, or the DEA, which created a scheduling system putting marijuana in the most severe bracket, stating that it has no medical purpose and its use should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. In more modern years, the movement has grown to legalize, and now we have 29 states with legalized medical use of marijuana and growing, and 8 states with recreational adult use. Back in March, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Beauregard Sessions said in a prepared statement, "I reject the idea that America will be a better place if marijuana is sold in every corner store, and I am astonished to hear people suggest that we can solve our heroin crisis by legalizing marijuana so people can trade one dependency for another that's only slightly less awful." So Jeff Sessions there is conflating the effects of marijuana with the effects of heroin, which is quite the claim. But I think we get to the heart of Jeff Sessions and others' belief systems about pot when we go back to the time to the days of Harry Anslinger, the displaced Bureau of Narcotics commissioner. He was displaced after the end of prohibition of alcohol. He was running that operation, and he needed to find some purpose in his life, I guess. He created the propaganda film Reefer Madness, and recreated his kind of tried to boost his career again by creating a problem, you know, or an opportunity, you know, to fight the devil's weed.
These high school boys and girls are having a hop at the local soda fountain. Innocently, they dance. Innocent of a new and deadly menace lurking behind closed doors. Marijuana, the burning weed with its roots in hell.
Current federal prohibition was established in Nixon's DEA with roots in Anslinger's ideologies in the 30s and boosted by Reagan's war on drugs in the 80s. And as with many things in American history, there is a component of racism and bigotry in this established legal approach, and even with the terminology used. Figures like Anslinger projected anti-immigrant prejudices toward Mexicans and negative sentiments toward African Americans through claims of the effects of smoking cannabis. He pushed the idea of murderous rage and pushed fears that African Americans would, as he saw it, forget their place in society and maybe sleep with white women or, you know, something that he could say to kind of cause shock and horror. And he somehow even linked jazz music to this racial alarmism. Police in Texas border towns linked pot use with immoral populations. It was kind of a way of putting that. Sensational newspaper articles came out and perpetuated those myths and xenophobia, not unlike the Facebook posts you're used to seeing floating around today that lack factual basis. Even the use of the Spanish-based term marijuana as opposed to cannabis was meant to link all the portrayed horrors of the drug to the Mexican immigrant population. Over time, we saw individual states ratcheting up harsh penalties and sentencing for the use of the substance, and we had the DEA scheduling in the 70s established by a president who, in release tapes, can be heard spewing his disdain for his political enemies, which he largely identifies as black people and hippies. A former aide of his even went so far as to say that the federal prohibition of pot was a political strategy to criminalize, thereby silencing most of his opposition, specifically African Americans. And of course, today, we have the socioeconomic inequality from lingering effects of segregation and systemic racism, meaning that poor urban communities are, you know, often predominantly African American, and with strict drug enforcement targeting this population means that black Americans are disproportionately imprisoned due to the sentencing structure for prosecuting use and you know, distribution of cannabis. Various studies from social sciences and other disciplines have shown this to be the case kind of over and over again. So we have that very important historical contextual piece with cannabis, or with even, you know, even the word or the terminology, you know, saying marijuana versus cannabis. It's all a concerted effort to establish a political strategy with racial intonations kind of baked in. And it's really hard to explore American history without seeing those things kind of baked in. Totally using the term baked in just coincidentally. So now back to Sessions' claim, comparing it to heroin. Since heroin is an opioid, this flies in the face of a 2017 study by the Department of Family Medicine and Public Health at UC San Diego, which examined associations between medical cannabis state policies and hospitalization rates of both opioid use and cannabis use. It found a 23% decrease in opioid use hospitalizations while having no significant effect on marijuana-related hospitalizations. There's also a consideration about degree that I think we can make. You hear people say, oh, this is this bag of Doritos is like crack for me, or maybe Paw Patrol is video crack for toddlers, which is something I may or may not have said. Or you'll see blog posts online saying things like giving your kids candy or letting them play Minecraft is literally the same as crack to their brains. While there's some truth in there, it definitely floods the reward system with more dopamine, you know, the pleasure chemicals, pleasure neurons than it needs, creating a dependency over the course of time and negative consequences when you do go without. The power of the transmission, I think, certainly matters as well. When you flood your brain's dopamine receptors with an excess of dopamine, and we're getting pretty technical here, so bear with me a little bit, but not too technical, really, but when you flood the dopamine receptors, so you have little receptors that receive the neurons, if there's an excess, it has an overstimulating effect that can cause those receptors to what's called downregulate, leaving fewer receptors to do the work. The same substance the next time will have be less effective with less active receptors to connect to. So to get the same effects of the substance or the behavior or whatever it is, you need you have this need to use more or to have more of it. When enough damage is done, you might even have less of an ability to enjoy other things you had previously enjoyed, like food or a sunny day, or even sex, because the dopamine it produces is not enough anymore for the decreased ability of your brain to receive those signals. Not to mention your body and brain begin to rely on the level of chemicals produced or inhibited by substances, whether it's GABA or serotonin or dopamine. And disrupting that process suddenly can cause severe sickness, sometimes even death. So it's pretty serious to kind of, you know, like when we talk about hearing quitting cold turkey, sometimes there can actually be health risks involved. A variety of factors go into the chemical process of how our brains handle the interactions between cannabis, meth, heroin, food, sex, and others. It's believed that some of the effects of the brain's reward pathway system is temporary with cannabis, which cannot be said with prolonged use of alcohol, heroin, cocaine, or meth. All that to say, the comparison between cannabis and to heroin or other opiates is fairly ludicrous. And most of you listening probably instinctively agree with that. There are some studies that claim pot is actually good for you. There are some that suggest negative effects on memory, cognitive abilities, stunting developing brains in teenagers. There's still a lot of research to be done, and these 29 states with medical and 8 with recreational, and you know the numbers are growing, they're providing some level of additional data for us, which is helpful. I believe we have yet to see any direct links of actual death from isolated cannabis use, from what I've seen. Now, professionally, I work in a dual diagnosis treatment environment. I practice therapy for people with substance use disorders, as they're called, like cannabis use disorder, alongside other diagnoses like, say, PTSD, depression, schizophrenia, generalized anxiety, other things like that. In practice, despite my personal skepticism about negative associations with the plant that I've heard growing up, I still treat, let's say, cannabis use disorder like I would treat anything defined as a disorder, which generally requires a clinically significant level of functional impairment. So if it becomes a negative force in your life, whether it causes emotional distress from, say, paranoia, or whether it creates mental health issues by way of negative legal outcomes, whether it prevents you from reaching your goals or becomes a crutch in your life, causes relational distress, there's definite potential for abuse, especially when the use begins earlier in life. You tend to see those negative manifestations. And while there are, to put it mildly, some doubts about the substance's natural addictive properties, something not naturally addictive can become a behavioral dependency. We create routines through repeated behavior, going to the gym or, logging onto Facebook or whatever. Through the repeated behavior, we link certain situations with stimuli that create a neural connection in the brain. And there are certainly times when any behavior can have a negative impact on your life, particularly if you're training yourself to respond to challenges that you could otherwise handle without mind-altering substances. But on a personal standpoint, I don't really care if it's something strictly for pleasure and you decide that's how you want to spend your time. And certainly if you're trying to relieve pain with minimal side effects, the devil's weed hardly seems that devilish. Given our country's checkered past that has linked cannabis to legal repercussions, it's worth renewed and honest dialogue at the very least. From a sociopolitical standpoint, I think that federal decriminalization, at the very least, is the right way to go on this. Thanks so much for listening to Off Baseline. If you haven't subscribed already, you can do that through Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. I think that's it. The show is out there wherever you get your podcasts, is what I'm trying to say. You can find me on Twitter at NateKCMO or the show at Off Baseline. You can find the show on Facebook, at Off Baseline or Facebook.com/PodBaseline, I think. If you enjoy the show, please consider supporting it by taking 2 minutes and leaving a brief review on iTunes/Apple Podcasts. You can do that from the comfort of your phone. It's a great way to support fledgling podcasts and help them grow. Just press that little 5-star button and say, great job, terrific, big league. For anything else, there's offbaseline.com, and there's all kinds of internet stuff. YouTube, we haven't updated the videos in a while. We're kind of in a transitionary place with our video content, so I appreciate your patience on that. And I encourage you to comment on social media. Start a dialogue with the show. I'll do my best to engage with your discussion. In the past month or so, haven't been doing great on that. Thinking specifically of you, Dylan. I'll be getting to you, back to you shortly. But thanks so much for listening. It means a lot. I really appreciate it. Wherever you're coming from on the political spectrum or from the social science spectrum, from, you know, various places in life, parts of the country, I really welcome a diverse listenership. Again, obviously, I'm pretty unapologetic with where I'm coming from, but I love to have an opportunity to, explain my thought process, my professional background and theoretical understandings, and still just growing this show, figuring out what's coming of it. And it's been a lot of fun. Thanks so much. And until next time, be well. We're going underground. And we're going underground. Hey!